I'm not Aaron Walney. Your bulletin says I am. He's actually taking the nursery today, and that was great of them to do that, he and Anne Marie. We're reading out of John's Gospel in the 15th chapter. That's the one about the true vine, but we're picking up a little after that, starting in verse 9 through 17. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lays down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing. But I have called you friends, for all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, so that you will love one another. May God bless our hearing and understanding and applying of his holy word. And may God bless Chris as he brings a proclamation of the word to us this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.
I wasn't going to show any video, but then I've been told that I needed to show the whale video before we start. For those of you that were in Sunday school class, you already saw it. And so by high demand, we're going to show a whale video, but I need to give you a little precursor first. We had just taken a group. We were only there a day or two. We had to switch some things around in our itinerary, and so we took the group remote a couple days ahead of time. And we went to a place we had never been called Kayak Beach, and we just got dropped off on the beach, loaded our kayaks up. We had not even set up camp yet, and we heard a whoosh, which is a whale breathing or blowing off. And so all of a sudden, we all stopped what we were doing, and this is what we got to watch.
We might have to add this place to our regular list.
Yeah, it's nice. Especially since the camp is right here.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Gotta come up soon.
Unless he's diving to broach.
Right.
Oh!
Yes!
Woo! Yes!
Yeah.
Awesome! So, yeah, there you have it. That's what I was supposed to show you. Actually, it's pretty neat because what you can't tell is the fact that that is probably somewhere between 40 and 50 feet long that just launched its whole body out of the water. And so it was pretty exciting because most years we go up, we don't get to see that. We saw it in 2011, but last year we got to see it a bunch of times, and it was pretty neat. So, I will close this so we get that off of the screen. So you're not distracted. Steve told me that I have to be done by 1 o'clock. And so I'll cut it short so that we're done by then. But no, actually, it's... Timothy will take care of it. Actually, it was interesting the other day. when Steve and I talked, Janelle started to kind of give me word that maybe this would happen on Wednesday night. And so then the next morning, Steve sends me a text real early in the morning. Usually when Steve and I get together, which we haven't had a chance to do for a little while, we go out for breakfast, as you can see. We both enjoy doing that. We have a lot of things in common. We both like to eat. We both have heart problems. And we're both messed up. And so you just don't know that a lot of times. But so Steve said, well, you know, could you do this? I want to offer you the whole shebang. You can do Sunday school. You can do the sermon. This was Thursday morning now. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be great. And so then 15 minutes later, he's like, what scriptures do you want to use? I didn't even get a chance to think about it yet. And so I gave him some verses, and then he's like, what's the title going to be? Okay, Waiting on the Beach. And so that's actually what it's going to be called, but we'll get to that a little bit later. John 15, 16, and 17. For you did not choose me, but I chose you, that you would go and bear fruit that would last. Therefore, my Father will give you what you ask in my name. This I command you, to love one another. When I was in 8th grade, I grew up in a Lutheran church. Can you all see me, or should I? I don't know where Steve, I don't know if he runs around or sits down or what. But in 1983, I grew up in a Lutheran church, and you had to go through confirmation class. And confirmation class was supposed to be kind of my affirming the baptism that I had when I was an infant. And so it was something I had to do. It didn't matter to me. My faith was not real to me at the time, but I had to do this class. It was a year long. I had one other student in there, so it was the pastor, myself, and one other student. I don't remember anything from the class except what he gave us at the very end. And I can remember sitting in a classroom or an office, and Tim was across from me, and the pastor was next to me, and he gave us each a set of verses, separate verses, that we had to memorize and then recite during the service for confirmation. Well, Tim forgot his on Confirmation Sunday, but I remembered mine, and it was John 15, 16, and 17. And for years, I really latched on to, I chose you to go and bear fruit, fruit that'll last. Now, I didn't really understand what that meant. I didn't really understand, you know, for me at the time, it was nothing more than something I had to memorize to pass this class so I can take communion with everybody else, you know, and that's really all it meant to me. But over the years, almost immediately, I started seeing God doing things in my life, even though I didn't acknowledge it or recognize it at the time, that was preparing me to serve later. When I was as early as in high school, I started coaching young kids, swimming lessons, basketball, first through eighth grade. I loved doing it. I loved seeing kids do something that they didn't think they could do. I started coaching at Living Word Academy in 2000, I think it was. They actually called, Donna and I lived up at Refreshing Mountain Camp at the time. I was an activity director / builder / whatever Marlon Harnish wanted me to do. And we lived right there on the grounds. And there was a family from Living Word Academy that came and asked if I would consider coaching the boys' basketball team. At the same time, a booster parent from Peckway Valley had asked the same thing. I went and watched Peckway Valley. They were terrible. So I went and watched Living Word Academy. They were worse. And so I asked Donna, and at the time, because I had stopped coaching in 95, I think. So I asked Donna, and she didn't really want me to do it at the time. And as bad as they were, I didn't really want to do it either. And so I declined. Well, a year later, they came back. And they said, would you consider coaching them? And so I went and I watched them again, and I'm like, nobody's this bad. And so I did, and I accepted the position there at Living Word Academy. I ended up being there for 6 years. But I remember, over time, trying to get these kids who didn't believe in themselves, who had never been pushed or motivated to do something beyond what they felt comfortable doing, I remember trying to get them to come along. And the first year, in fact, the first week in practice, I had a dad come in, because he had heard that the kids ran for 40 minutes in practice. And that's ridiculous. And if anybody ever played basketball, there is running involved. And so I remember just politely saying to him, your team won 2 games last year. I don't really care what they did in practice. And I told him the gym was closed. And so he wasn't back in anymore. And over the next 2 years, we started to build in those kids what it was to believe in each other and to have a freedom to play. Now, understand, as a young coach, I was pretty gung-ho. And so I didn't have a real understanding of what it was to be a Christian coach, how that ties together, how you can use the athletic arena to develop kids for Christ. At the time, really, honestly, I wanted to win as a young coach. And those kids actually had better and truer faith than what I had. But I still helped them start to believe in something. The second year, I remember the seniors, they were really fighting me. And we were like 1-9 at the halfway mark through the season. And I said, listen, guys, if you don't do it my way, we're going to build for the future. And so I took the seniors and I put them against the young guys. And the young guys were buying into everything I had. Everything that I was saying to them, everything I was telling them they were capable of doing. And we ended up finishing 11-13 after a 1-9 start. The next year they went 25-5. And they won the league the next 4 years. Didn't lose a league game for 4 years. When I left there, I went to Lancaster Bible College. One of my first experiences in Alaska after... Now, you need to know, Donna and I lived in Alaska. I may have already told you that. But what you didn't know was that Donna and I were dating before we went to Alaska. And I was in Norfolk, Virginia. And I was at an A school. And what they do is, if there's 35 of you in the class, they'll have 35 billets. And the number one graduate gets the first choice of all the billets. Number two, so on and so forth. Well, I wanted to be close to Donna, so the only one that was close was in Norfolk. And I went down and I looked at a unit down there. And I remember us talking afterwards on the payphone. And I told her, yeah, I went down and looked at it. I think that's the one I'm going to pick. I was number four. I knew the guys ahead of me weren't going to pick it, so I was pretty comfortable. That was the night before the selections. But then later that night, they added a billet in Homer, Alaska, and on the Coast Guard Cutter Sedge. And so I talked to the guys that were ranked ahead of me. Back then in 1990, Alaska wasn't popular. And so I wanted to go to Alaska. I thought this would be awesome. And so the next morning, the billets came up. The other three guys chose their billets. I chose Alaska. I called Donna on the phone later on. She's like, so are you going to Norfolk? I said, no, not quite. Gone to Homer, Alaska. And it got quiet. And so we got engaged in October of that year in 1989-90. I'm just like Steve. So, no. And I left for Alaska the next morning. She came up at Christmas time for 2 weeks while we're engaged, came back, maybe not quite 2 weeks, came back, and then we got married. I came back for our wedding in June. So I loved Alaska already. In 2006, when I was coaching college basketball at Lancaster Bible College, we took the team up there in November, and they used to have a thing called the Great Alaska Shootout. We went up as a precursor to the Great Alaska Shootout, where the big schools pummel some poor little Division III school 4 days in a row to get ready. We were that poor little Division III school. And so we went up. It took us 28 hours of travel time to get there because of some mishaps with planes and stuff like that. We got pummeled the first night in Fairbanks, pummeled the second night in Fairbanks, flew to Anchorage where everything was going to be better. We got pummeled there the third night. So we're going into our fourth night, and it's our last full day in Alaska. And our guys are really beginning to question, why did we even come here? You know, we came to Alaska, and we haven't seen anything. Our head coach, I was just an assistant coach. The head coach was just about basketball. So it was practice, eat right, school, basketball. Practice, eat right, school, basketball. I'm like, let's go show them something. I'm sneaking them out at night so we can drive around the airport. Coach is lecturing me, knock it off. I'm like, okay, and then we sneak out the next morning around the airport. But on Sunday morning, he wanted to go to church. And I'm like, Pete, we can go to church any Sunday, but we haven't taken these guys out, and there's so much here. And these guys are demoralized right now. I said, let me just do a devotional with them, and then we'll go for a drive. So that morning I did a devotional, and I talked about the fact that God doesn't make a mistake, and we were there for a reason. And as hard as it was for us to go and get pummeled night in, night out, night in, night out, actually we knew we were in for it really bad that night, because on the news, on the TV, they were bashing the team in Anchorage for only beating us by like 30 points. And so we knew that next night we're going to get hammered. They got 6'10 guys from Australia. We got 6'2 guy from Baltimore. And so anyway, I did this devotional, and I was like, guys, you know, you need to realize that it's not a mistake that we're here, and I really believe something special is going to happen with this team. But we can't let this break us. We need to build on what we're doing here. God's doing something awesome. He brought us here for a reason. And we went for a drive outside of town, and on the way outside of town, we saw eagles. And so the guys are all jumping out of the van, and they're going up taking pictures. And then we saw doll sheep on the cliff, so we're taking pictures of that. We drove down to a river. Now, understand, it's 13 degrees, which was 16 degrees warmer than when we were in Fairbanks. So it's a heat wave. And so we stopped at this one place. The guys took off their shirts. We did a team picture up on the rocks. And when we left from there, from the team picture, I'm in one van, Pete's in the van behind me, and I'm like, hey, where's Carpenter? And so I get on the phone. I call Pete Beers. I'm like, Pete, do you have Ryan? He's like, no. I said, me neither. But we got a problem. So we turned around. We went back to the rocks, and Ryan's sitting up there. And Ryan's sitting actually down at the parking area below the rocks where we had the picture taken, freezing. But his eyes were all swollen. I'm like, what's going on, man? He's like, you know, this is the first time this morning that I felt like I had a father. Now, Ryan was a senior on our team, actually in his red shirt senior year, because he had blown his knee the year before. And he said, when I after our devotional this morning and sitting up here and seeing how big everything is and how small I am, he said, I feel like God just put his arms around me. I feel like I know who my father is now. I've never had a father tell me he loves me or anything like that. And at that time, I knew there's something special about what's going on. I didn't know what. We drove down. We drove down from there. I just kind of let that soak in a little bit. We got to a river that was frozen, but there were ripples, and the salmon were coming through, and there was blood all around the banks. And here, there were eagles in the trees on the other side, and the eagles would come down and snag the fish and eat them, and so there were carcasses along there, and that's what was going on. So we got to see all this neat stuff, and guys were, you know, there's neat things happening, even though we don't know exactly what. We're driving back to Anchorage, which is only a 40-minute drive from where we went. And I remember calling Don on the phone. I'm like, the only way this could be better would be if we saw a moose. A lot of the guys had not seen a moose yet. And I might have still been on the phone with her. I'm not sure. When all of a sudden there's a cow and a calf moose right next to the road. We slam on the brakes. Everybody's flying out of the vans. Our center from the basketball team, the black guy from Baltimore, who's 6'2", the biggest guy on our team, has my 12-year-old son, who weighs about 100 pounds at best. He's holding him between the moose and himself to take pictures, because he's going to sacrifice Ethan or Nathaniel if that moose charges him. So anyway, but what was neat was to watch throughout the year as these guys continued to believe, and we just kept saying, just trust in what we're doing. Believe in what we're doing. God has a purpose for what we're doing. We went through some hard knocks. And at the end of that season, that team became the first team, men's team, in LBC history to win their regional championship. And we went on to nationals in Oklahoma City. A couple years later, Donna and our family and I, we were out in Indiana for 4 years. And when we came back, Lancaster County Christian School had formed when we were away. And they asked if I would come back and be involved in the baseball program. And at first I came back just as an assistant coach, as a pitching coach. And I remember our first practices that year. Now, our oldest son, Nathaniel, was a senior on the team that year. And so it was kind of special. It's the first time I ever coached on a team that he was on. Actually, a second time, but first baseball time. And anyway, I remember us going to a cabin, and we had a good team. I could see it. And I remember us going to a cabin, and the head coach and assistant coach were like, you know, let's do this game and this game and this game, and, I'm like, hey, let me talk to the guys once. I'd like to do a little devotional with them. And so I did a devotional with them, and I remember challenging them and saying, you know, this team has been formed. It will never again play together after this year. It never played together before this year, this group of individuals. But I said, I'd like to know what your goals are. And as they talked around the room, you know, most of them said, I would like to win the CCAC championship. That's their conference, Commonwealth Christian Athletic Conference. And I remember just saying, that's it? And I talked to them and I said, guys, I'm going to tell you, I just came from Indiana where our one school team there, we had a football state championship, a football runner-up, two girls basketball state championships, and a baseball championship as we left that school, and then they won it to get into the next year as well. And I remember looking at our squad and saying, these guys could be special. And I told them there at that cabin, much to the chagrin of our head coach who disagreed with me, I said, guys, you could do something no one in this school has ever done. You could win a district championship. Who knows what else we could do? But if you limit yourself to just this, I guarantee you're not going any farther than that. And I said, what you've got to know is if you believe in this and you trust in the process, you're going to give yourself a chance to do something you never thought possible. But if you don't believe, I guarantee it won't work. I guarantee you won't get there. One will give you a chance, doesn't mean it'll happen, but the other will completely negate it, no doubt. And I said, I want you to believe. And that team went on that season to win their first district championship. In dominant fashion, actually, at York, which was really neat. Our son got to catch the pop-up, the final pop-up, and you can hear on a video online my dad going, don't drop it, don't drop it. You got to get this, Nathaniel. And Nathaniel, to this day, says, well, as soon as it hit his glove, he threw everything and ran to the pitcher because he had dropped a bunch of those before. And so, but they ended up losing in the state semifinal that year, and they had never won a district championship before. They had never even gone to the championship game. And they started believing. And when I talked to them about, you don't know why God has assembled this team. You don't know who you're going to impact. You don't know who you're going to touch. But that year in the first round of states, we had the opportunity. We were playing at Ephrata. And in the fifth inning or somewhere around there, we were losing 5-0. We came back and tied it up 5-5. And all of a sudden, it just dumped. Boosh. Like 2 inches of rain. And they postponed the game till the next day. And so the next day we all had to come back. Now it's 5-5, and I think it was the sixth inning or something like that. We came back the next day, and we ended up winning in extra innings and going on to the next game and then to the next game after that. But afterwards, when they came together, they all huddled together and they prayed immediately right behind home plate. And I have a picture. It's actually in my car right now. I should have brought that in. It's about this big, and I brought it on purpose to show you, so I already blew it. But the picture is of that team, and you don't see any of their numbers. You can barely tell their faces. All you see is their hands in the air like this and a finger pointing up. And it's not saying we're number one. It's saying who they represented. Because they, at the bottom, I got this picture from a gentleman who was a photographer who was in our dugout because of the rain delay the day before. And he was interacting and watching our kids interact with each other as they believed in each other and they never got down when they were behind. He watched them gather and support one another and believe and believe and believe and know that they were going to do something great. And they ended up doing it. And the next day he took this picture and he called me because I was the athletic director at the time. Or no, I wasn't. But he called and he said, hey, I've got this picture I'd like to give you. And I didn't know what it was or anything like that. But when he came to the school, he had it blown up. The reason we have the picture here is because it had the wrong caption at the bottom. It said that we won the LL and the District 3 championship. We didn't win the LL. We weren't in the LL. We were in the CCAC. And so I got that one for free. But it was big. But the reason, and he put a caption at the bottom. He said, an audience of one. He didn't know. He didn't know that that was actually our theme for the season. All season long, we talked about playing for an audience of one. If you give everything you got, it's pleasing to our Father. It doesn't matter win or lose. And they ended up doing something they never believed they could. Over the next 3 years, I watched as God brought other pieces to that team. We had a kid come who was a homeschool kid. We had one come, and he would drive every day from Spring Grove all the way to Lancaster to be part of LCCS. Not baseball, but of the school in general. We had these kids come from different places, and over the years, we kept talking about believe, give ourselves a chance, understand who we represent. It doesn't matter win or lose. Give everything we got. Well, in 2015, which Steve had the opportunity to be part of and see, that team ended up going on, and we got to the state championship game at Penn State. And I remember at the beginning of the season, I had told them, you could win a state championship this year. You're good enough to do that. And as a coach, you don't like to tell someone something they're really not capable of doing. You want to kind of push them to the edge. But I told them, you can do something like that. You could be that special. And the night before, we went up to Penn State. We had ice cream there. God was doing all these little things along the way that I knew something special was happening. I kept telling Donna, something special is happening. And the night before we got to the stadium, someone let us in the stadium. He just happened to be there. We got a team picture in there, you know, and all that stuff. And at like 1 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden, I start doubting myself. And I started walking around. Donna would tell you, I got out and I walked around. Do you remember? Walking around the parking lot of the hotel at like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. Because I'm nervous. I'm telling our guys, don't be nervous. Trust in the gifts you've been given. You've been prepared. I'm scared to death. I'm walking around. So the next morning, though, I remember talking to him. And I said, listen, guys. We are not defined by whether we win this game today or we lose. We don't have that pressure. We're defined by the one we represent. You've played all year knowing that. When we've lost, you never got down. When we've won, you never got big heads. You stuck to the process. You believed in who you were. And this game will not change that. And when we went into that game, before the game, I was walking from the press thing, and a player from the other team got right up behind my ear. It was their pitcher. I didn't know that at the time. And he said, now we were known for small ball. And we had demolished some teams in the playoffs because we kept bunting and wearing them out that way. And I hear this voice say, Coach, don't even think about bunting. I've got it all covered. I just kept walking. I didn't even look around. I'm ADD, so there's all sorts of stuff going through my head anyway. But I'm walking back to the batting cages, and I think, did someone just say that? And as I turn to go under the stadium, I look back and they're all high-fiving each other. And the pitcher's back there, he's giving me the eye. And I'm like, I walked right into my assistant coaches. I said, guys, come here. You're not going to believe what just happened. This kid said, and I told him what he said. I said, when we get Chandler on, our leadoff batter, I said, I want to bunt him around. Well, guess what? Chandler got on. Next kid, first pitch. Sacrifice bunt, we moved him to second. So one pitch, he's already on second. Next pitch, we fake bunt. Their third baseman comes, we steal third. Catcher gets up, throws the third. There's nobody there. Throws it into the outfield. Our kid scored. It took two pitches, and we scored. And I wanted, the human side of me wanted to say, how's that bunt coverage working? I didn't do it. I stayed gathered in myself. But we ended up winning 8-0. 8-0. And you know what was interesting? Was afterwards, while it was a neat accomplishment, for a lot of us, it wasn't what you would expect. You know, you think of winning a huge championship and how excited you'd be. But it was cool. But we were kind of like, that's it. And I think the reason we were that way was because we weren't necessarily playing for a championship. Yeah, we wanted to win the championship. Don't get me wrong. Every kid wants to win a championship. But because they knew who they represented, they knew that it wasn't do or die. They succeeded because they believed in something. I just had breakfast yesterday morning with our starting fielder, Chandler, who ended up scoring that first run with a big smile on his face. And I said, why do you think we won the state championship that year? And he said, Coach, I think because, one, we believed in ourselves, And two, he said, in my couple years there, we were the first team that understood what it was to play for an audience of one and play with that freedom. To know that if I fail, my father is not unhappy with me. He rejoices in watching me use those gifts. He said, you believed in us and we believed in each other. And we loved each other, and that's why we succeeded. You know, we live in an area where we have hundreds of kids who don't have anyone who believes in them. Here in Lancaster County, there's kids that sleep in bunches in a hotel room. There's kids that are homeless that sleep in parks, sleep in a restroom in a park. My brother coached one from Pequay Valley a couple years ago. His entire junior year, he was homeless, and he bounced from one place to another, to another, to another, just because his oldest brother had died in a car accident a couple years before. The next one committed suicide on the one-year anniversary. His parents ended up splitting up, and when they did, he was left in the dirt. And he didn't want to leave. The only thing that he had that was stable was his friends at his school. And so he would bounce from house to house to house, or he would go and stay at the park, like I said. My brother actually found him in a restroom in a park when it was 30 degrees outside, and that's where he was sleeping. We've got those kids in our midst, and we don't realize it. And so over the years, I've been doing these trips to Alaska where we've taken student groups, we've taken men's groups, and we've always seen these incredible things happen there where people have an encounter with God that's unique that you can't do somewhere else in this environment where they're used to everything that's going on. You've got to get them displaced from those things. And so a couple of years ago, you know, we knew these trips create fruit, but a couple years ago in 2014, Janelle's first trip up there, I remember sitting with the group. It was Leah, Janelle, Sarah Swore, James Hayward, a bunch of kids that are actually on our staff now. And I remember sharing with them John 15, verse 16 and 17. And I read it to them, or I recited it to them. I said, you know, for God, you did not choose me, but I chose you, that you would go and bear fruit, fruit that'll last. Understand that that was my main focus at the time. And I said, you know, we've been doing these trips, and the kids were talking about the great experiences they've been having. But I said, how do we know? These create fruit, no doubt. But how do we know that they create fruit that lasts? And so one of the kids, who's they're all bright kids, much brighter than I. And so the one kid said, well, say the whole thing again. And so I said it, and I went the whole way through to the end where he said, this I command you, love one another. And they said, maybe that's it. Because that's an investment. That's something that happens over time. And so we kind of left there thinking, well, you know, maybe there's something to that. In 2015, my wife had, she had been dealing with a form of breast cancer for several years. She had had lumpectomies kind of on an almost annual basis for several years from 2012, 13, 14. And then I think it was 15 when, 14, 15, 14, she had, 15, she had a double mastectomy. And she spent either 11 or 16 days in the ICU at Penn, and then whatever it wasn't at Penn, she spent the other 11 or 16 days in the ICU up here at Lancaster General. And I remember in our house, the TV is always set to, there's three channels that come up. Sports channels, Discovery Channel, or the Food Network. I don't watch the Food Network or HGTV. She watches that. So I'm at home. She's in the hospital. I'm getting ready to watch Discovery Channel or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, the channel switches to one of her automatic recordings. And the recording is of a chef who's redoing a kitchen somewhere. Who cares? But it just so happened that it was at a youth camp. And it was at in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And it was for an organization called City Kids DC. And what they did at City Kids was they would work with kids from the time they were in seventh grade till they graduate from high school. And they had after-school programs and all this stuff. And I remember thinking, man, that's it. Maybe that's it. That's how we create the fruit that lasts. It has to be an engagement that lasts a long period of time. And so I went to the hospital, and I remember saying to her, did you happen to see this or whatever? And she probably wished that I hadn't seen it. And But I remember thinking, you know, that might be it. And so over the next while, I started thinking, how does that work? And I know I met with some other good friends and Ron Glessner, and you know, we talked about, you know, we could do all this. And because ultimately, we want these kids to believe in themselves. We want them to know who they are in Christ, that God has given each one of them gifts, that this hopelessness that they grow up in doesn't have to be the end-all for each one of them. You don't have to end up just like your brother in prison or your father who was killed or whatever. And so over time, we started to develop this mission and this vision for creating Upward Adventures, which would be something that's a longer-lasting, more intense and engaged relationship with these kids. And so that's where we are. And the thing is, when we do these trips throughout the year, understand now, next year will be the first year we'll have 7th and 8th graders up. This year we're actually just doing like young adult trips, men's trips. We have a family and friends week when Erica Dieter's going to be petrified on a plane coming up. So we've got friends and family coming up for a week. Then we have a father-son trip at the end of the summer. And our focus this year is on preparing everything for the kids next year. But from this year on, these kids are going to come back each year. And our goal is to walk with them to where each month we're going to do activities with them, because they're all going to come from ministry partners in this area who are already working with these kids on a regular basis. And so these kids will come back. We'll be engaged with them every month. We'll be able to take them back each summer. And we'll walk them through from first understanding that they matter, that to understanding that God has given you gifts. You are unique and not designed or made by mistake. That you have a purpose. And to help them to discern what that might be, and to build and invest in them so that over the next couple years, by the time they graduate with a vision for something that has hope, for something where they're skilled and they believe in being able to break this chain of hopelessness and end up changing a culture of hopelessness into one of hope. The thing that's unique is when we're on these trips, we don't know who's going to be impacted. And I want to tell you a story, because it really has changed a lot for me over the last year. When I showed you that video of the whale, what some of you probably didn't see is there's a small island out there about a mile off the coast. And when we each group, usually around the fifth day or the sixth day, we do a campfire called Hurts and Hopes. And everybody in the group, staff included, shares something that's been hurting, something that they're carrying, a burden or whatever it is that is just really something tough to deal with. And they put that out in front of the group. And they share what their hopes are. And at this campfire this night, it was a men's group. And we had, within that group, we had men who, we had one who was divorced because of the way his addiction to pornography had ruined his marriage. We had another father. There were two brothers. One was like 50 or 51. The other was probably 4 or 5 years younger than him. The older one had his two sons that were in their 20s come up. And then the other one had a son who was a senior at Manheim Township. He had with his divorced wife, or his wife through divorce, however you say that. And I remember the one saying, the older one, just starting to weep. And he started sharing with 16 other men and other people how when his children were in junior high and high school, he had beaten them. And he didn't know any better, but he had never apologized either. And I just remember him crying, and his one son was right behind him, and I saw his son put his hand on his shoulder. And his other son was across the way, and he walked around the group, and he walked over to his dad. And they stood there, and they put their hands on his shoulder as he cried. And he asked their forgiveness. And I remember his other brother saying, "That's the way we were raised. We didn't know any better." And so they're pouring all this out. And as a group, you know, we're praying with them and we're helping them to give these things away. To know that you don't need to carry that, that, that Jesus took care of some of these things for us, of all of this. And so it goes around the group, and my youngest son, Ethan, is on the, he's one of the last ones to speak. Now, Ethan is very much like his dad. We're ADD. With that, I'm ADD and I'm redheaded. I'm explosive, selfish, independent. Anything else, Donna? Don't say anything, please. And he's very much the same way. And he and his mom, oftentimes, he knows exactly what buttons to push and how to hurt her. And at the campfire that night, he just cried and he's like, I have hurt my mom so bad. And I don't want that. And I want her to know that I love her. And I want God to change that in me. And I remember his dad just embracing that and wanting so badly for that. I've had some of those same explosive things with Donna myself in our marriage. And it's very hurtful. And when we got done with the fire, most of the guys, you know, they kind of go off by themselves and they talk, and a bunch of them went to bed. And understand, it was choppy out. We're at Kayak Beach, and we had one guy in the group who's a championship kayaker, and he wanted to go kayaking in Alaska, and it had been too rough to go for the last 2 days. And so I said, listen, I'm not comfortable sending anybody with you. I'll go with you. And Ethan heard me say that, and he's like, Dad, I'll go with him. And so I said, okay. You know, this guy's really good. So Ethan will be safe with him. And as they got into the kayak, I went down, I put him in the kayak, I got everything strapped up, and I pushed them off into the water, and they're instantly taking water over the bow of the kayak. And I'm watching them because the tide's going out. And the tide in Alaska is not like in New Jersey. You go to New Jersey, you stand here during high tide, here during low tide. In Alaska, you stand here during low tide and you get on top of this building during high tide. Okay? And so the tide was going out, but the wind was blowing in, which makes the waves kind of choppy. And I watched them paddle, and the plan was that they were just going to go around that little grassy island that was a mile away. And so that they were just going to go around that and come back. Well, we watched, and instead of making a line toward that island, they were paddling that way, but they were getting pushed way off to the right toward another island. They were fighting it, it appeared to us. There were only four of us left, and we're watching them in binoculars, and I'm watching them struggle. And I'm like, man, this might not be good. You know, and I'm the idiot leader that sent one boat out. Don't send your kids with me. And no, we have procedures. We won't let that happen again. But so finally they get way out there, and they're parallel now to the coast where we are. And they're finally working their way toward that island, and they get over, and with the swells, the tide is now slack. So now it's just swells, but there's no water, no waves really. It's just long, big swells. And so you can watch them in the binoculars, and they kind of disappear, reappear, and they get behind the island. And understand, they left it like 10:30 at night. And so it took them like 45 minutes to get there. It's still light out. It's Alaska, okay? But it is getting darker. And they disappeared behind the island, and I remember us in a group saying, well, it should take them like 10 minutes to pop out the other side. Well, 10 minutes went by, we didn't see them. 20 minutes went by, we didn't see them. And while we were all kind of jovial for a while, all of a sudden it started getting quiet, the four of us that were on the beach. And we're very intent. We're watching with binoculars, waiting for them to pop out. And we don't see them. And I remember, man, my heart started to hurt. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm picturing what might have happened. And that my then 16-year-old son is drowned and it's my fault. And I'm starting, I can barely hold back the tears. And the guys are like, should we call for help? And I'm like, if we call now, they're going to require that they be missing for a longer period of time. You know, so they won't send anyone right away. Well, a half hour goes by, we don't see them. And so I call. And I call 911 because we're remote. They take a bunch of information. Like 15 minutes later, they call back. They're like, we're getting ready to send a Coast Guard chopper from Kodiak. It's going to take them a while to get there. And at least an hour has passed now, and we haven't seen my son or the other guy. And I was petrified. I've had two heart attacks or minor heart attacks, one when I was 35, one when I was 42, because I coached girls basketball, which isn't really a sport. And so, just kidding, sorry. But, and I started thinking, they're going to have to medevac me off this beach. And how do I explain to Donna that Ethan died and all this stuff? Well, it's dark now. And just off the corner to the one side, during low tide, there's a bunch of rocks that are exposed that you don't see during high tide. But I thought I saw a shadow out there. And when I thought I saw something move, I said to James Hayward, I said, James, shine a light out there. Is that them? And he's like, that's not them. That's just the rocks. I said, please shine a light out there. And when we did, they shined a light back. And the other guys all ran down to the beach, and I just dropped. I just dropped and started crying. I had never been so scared in my life. And I remember when they pulled up on the beach and the other guys are helping them out of the boat and they're hugging them, and Ethan and Chip are like, what's wrong? And we're like, we thought something bad happened. And Ethan's like, you know, we tried to call you, but the phone went dead right away. He picked up his phone, showed me it wouldn't come on. He's like, they saw it was either a whale or otters, and they started following them. And because they were far enough behind the island, we never saw them. You know, when I hugged Ethan that time, man, I never held him so tight. And when we walked back up to the camp, I hugged him again. And when we went into the tent, I took my stuff off, and in the tent, James was on the far end, Ethan was in the middle, I was on this side, and I put my hand on him, and I had to go to sleep touching him, knowing that he was okay. And for that period of time, that second in time, I caught just a glimpse of how much God loves us. And I realized then, you know, when Ethan and I watched them getting pushed away, and I watched them disappear, after the things that he had shared that night, there was not one wrong that he had ever done, not one hurt he had ever created, not one offense he had ever made in our family that stuck out in my mind. The only thing I wanted was for him to come back to the beach. That's all I wanted. You know, when those that we interact with and those that we love, those that we fail to love, when they can realize there's people in this room right now, myself included, there's times, man, the tide is pushing me away from God. The things of life, whether it's work, you know, there's people in here who might struggle with work. It might be a struggle with an addiction of some kind. It might be relationships with somebody, with their family, with their wife, with their spouse, with their children. Who knows what it is? But there's baggage that we're carrying, and and we're allowing it to push us away and push us away and push us away. And we get to a point where we're behind this island and we can't see God anymore. We feel like we're out of touch. And even if we could see Him, why would He want to forgive me? And so we draw further away. But I'm telling you right now, if you're in this room and you're struggling with something that's going on, as I am, and I got to remind myself about this, God, just as I was when I was on that beach, God's not tracking all those wrongs. He's not tracking the hurts that you're carrying. He's not tracking the offenses. Man, He's waiting on that beach, and all He wants to do is wrap His arms around you. And when He sent His Son, He wiped all those things clean. And when you come back to that beach and you allow Him to wrap His arms around you, it's done. He created a room for you, for I. So my challenge to you this morning, my prayer is that if you're struggling, man, give it away. Don't let that island get stuck between you. Don't let the waves push you away. And in your understanding of how much He loves you and understanding that He'll drop that for you, we need to extend that same love to the people we interact with. If God can forgive, why can't we? So I'm going to pray with you, but I just ask that, man, if you're struggling, give it up. Give it up. If there's people that you're beating down, extend the same grace and love that God does to us. All right? Father, I thank You so much. I thank You so much that You do love us, Father, that that we have the opportunity to interact and engage with other people and share your love, but we first need to understand how much you love us. It's one thing to know that you sent your Son to die for us, but it's another thing to really allow you, Father, to fill our cup. To walk with you, Father, to serve you, to know you, and to have the freedom, as those players did, to know that even if we fail, you love us and you're waiting there on the beach for us. Lord, if there's one in here that's hurting or that's carrying a burden, Father, I just pray, Lord, that they could put that at your feet, that they could walk up onto that beach and let you put your arms around them and know and experience your love like they never have before. I thank you for each one in here, Lord, and the unique purpose that you've made in each one of them and the gifts that you've given each one. And if they, Father, don't know what they're called to, Lord, that you would reveal that to them and nurture that in them and surround them with people that can build that in them so that they too can serve and fulfill what it is that you desire for their lives, that they wouldn't stop short. Lord, I thank you for who you are and how much you love us and gave us. And we praise you in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I think now you know why I was so thrilled to be able to invite Chris to share his heart here. And we'll have to hear more from you, Chris. It's a blessing. And Donna, and you guys, your family, be blessed. Leah, Isaac. I read this verse last Sunday. It's actually a couple verses. I think today, after hearing Chris's message, these same words you heard last week might have a little more impact. I pray they do. It's in Ephesians. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or think, according to the power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Let's stand as we're dismissed. The God of peace, who brought again from the dead our Lord Jesus, the great shepherd of the sheep, through the blood of the everlasting covenant, make us perfect in every good work to do his will, working in us that which is well-pleasing in his sight, through Jesus, to whom be glory forever and ever. And all God's children said together, Amen. Go in peace, and the God of peace go with you.